Good evening. I'd like to welcome you to the June 5th meeting of the Board of Directors of the Town of Discovery Bay. At this time, if you would stand up and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Carol, can you call the roll?
President Tatro?
Not here.
Vice President Simon?
Here.
Director Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Steele?
Here.
Thank you. At this time, we're going to go into public comment. Public comment, the public may address the board on any issue within the district's jurisdiction which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda at the time that item is called. Any person wishing to speak to the any person to speak before the board may come up to the microphone and you have 3 minutes to speak. Do we have any public comment? Come on up. Thank you.
I apologize if this item is already on the agenda as I'm not aware of the agenda. So my name is Tanya Sean. I'm here to discuss the water quality that we've been receiving lately. My understanding is that this is an issue that has been ongoing for quite some time. However, I just started noticing it last year. You're probably wondering what's in the sack, and I brought my water samples and I brought one of my filters to demonstrate the quality that I actually received in my home. So I'm not aware of any plans in the future that you guys have to address this concern. But I would be very interested to see what you do have to address it. I'm being told by the other water that it's just high usage times and it's getting low into the tank. It rolls around sediment and then pushes it out to the homes. I don't see that to be acceptable. So I'm asking you what the plan is for the future to address and ensure that we have enough water for all of our residents here.
Thank you. Let me say that we've had sporadic issues. If you get together with Virgil, I don't know, at this point, whether yours is a brown water complaint, is this a brown water complaint?
It is.
I know we've addressed this, or we're addressing it at the time, and I think it would be easier at this point if you get together with Virgil, if we could do that. Virgil can tell you what we're doing.
Can you leave your name and number with Carol up front? Thank you.
And we'll try to help you if we can.
Great.
Thank you.
I believe we have it.
Are there any other public comments? At this time, we'll close public comment. Rick, we're going to move the presentation. We're going to move D, area agency reports, ahead of the presentation. That's okay. So at this time, we have a representative, AJ from the Sheriff's Department. Come up and leave your report.
I know property crimes are always a big concern for the community. So on the list, we have 6 residential burglaries. It really only should be 5. One of them is miscoded. It's really a vandalism, not a residential burglary. 5 is still more than I'd like to see. All of them showed signs of forced entry versus the traditional someone left something out or left something unlocked. So on the positive side, at least people are locking things up. The negative side, people are kicking the doors in. Or breaking the sliding glass doors or the latches in the back of the houses to get in. We did find evidence in 2 of them. We recovered a flashlight in 1 and some kind of metal container. It wasn't quite clear from the report what it was, but those both items were taken and looked into evidence. And in 1 case, the crime lab, we were able to get them to come out and process the scene as well. So we're hoping from all of that, we'll be able to get some fingerprints and match them up to somebody and make the case go forward. I don't have any updates on that yet. The lab is backed up. It may be another month or so before I have any good information about whether they were able to get any fingerprints and if they match them. So it, it's an unfortunate thing, but at least the positive is that we got some fingerprints off of it.
But was this daytime or evening time?
They're mixed. I've had the crime analyst take a look at it, and unfortunately there's no one target time. There are a couple of them that are during the daytime. There's one we don't know because it's a vacation home, so we're not entirely sure. It could have happened last month for all we know. It was just reported this month. So a couple are in the day, a couple at night. There's one I have some doubts about as to whether it was really forced entry or not. A person who claims that they locked the door. There are no obvious signs of force. The door has damage. I'm not really sure how current the damage is, so we're giving them the benefit of the doubt, treating it as such, but it may have been just someone opened the door, walked in, and took items. So, again, that one's not perfect either. So, but day and night, we're getting it all over the board, so I can't pin it down to any one area.
Thank you.
Unfortunately. With some of the other property crimes, they're listed statistically, nothing really that concerns the community as a whole. They're sort of oddball crimes. There was one, a catalytic converter was taken from the vehicle, and I'd be more concerned if I had seen multiples of that, but it was just one. Saw one where one of the burned buildings had some items taken from the property, copper wiring and things. So that's, again, just because it was available. One housekeeper stole some items, and then another one, some items were left and went missing sometime between that last November and May. So again, their stats, and they may look, I just want to put everyone's minds at ease, at least with the non-burglary stats, that may not be as big a problem as they appear. They just all happen to pop up on this particular month because of when they were reported, but they're kind of oddball things there. Let's see. The one other one that I'm sure will catch everyone's attention, there was one, a weapon on school grounds. Young man brought a couple of knives to school just to show friends. Obviously not a good decision to make, and they were confiscated, and the school dealt with it. A report was written. My gut tells me I doubt there'll be any criminal filing behind it because there's no criminal intent. He's a good kid. He just made a bad decision. So the school would most likely be left for the school and the parents. But I know that one will jump out. You're looking at the stats, and that's really all that is. So,
any comments from the board?
No.
Thanks, AJ. From the public? Any comments from the public?
Thanks. Thank you.
CHP's not here, I believe. Fire department.
Deer Valley. which then takes your piece of equipment a greater length of time to get there, so that extends your response times. Does anybody have any questions?
Any questions at the board?
Yes.
Maybe a related one on medical calls. You're out away from the station. The ambulance service company that's here, are they able to get here? They're notified at the same time, mostly on medical call?
Yes. Yeah. Depending on if the person dials 911 from their cell phone or their home phone, it goes to the PSAP system, and then it gets sent to the proper agency, and then it gets dispatched out. That's why it's so important. If you do have a medical emergency, dial 911. Don't drive down to the fire station, because our fire engines are very busy, and they're either on a call or they're training, so they just might not be there. So that's why it's important to stay in place and tell them where you're at.
I guess my question was on their response times. Do they track that at all?
AMR, as a for-profit company, does track their ambulance times.
I guess we'll have to maybe ask them about how that
works. Do have a QRV, a quick response vehicle, with one paramedic in it. That's not a transport.
Right, just to get there for heart attack.
Just get there and starts emergency care.
Yeah, that's my main concern.
Yeah.
Because if you're dispatched away from the station, it's a medical situation. If they can, we've got somebody else to help you. Yeah.
Is he there sooner sometimes than the truck? Paramedic?
Your fire district employees know the area. They're dedicated to the area. They don't come and go like an AMR employee does.
Just answered the question.
What's that?
I think you just answered the question.
I'm trying to be
PC.
Not good at it, so.
Any public comment? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Do we have anybody here tonight from East Contra Costa County Fire Protection?
This report came from that meeting.
Okay. So. Supervisor Mary Pifo, Karen Cornell. How are you?
Couple things to report out. I want to let you know about some road work that's going to be done in the next couple months. I'm not sure if you guys remember, but a couple years ago, the Regency Mobile Home Park on Marsh Creek Road was granted a line from Contra Costa Water District. They will be putting that in. They plan to start mid to early July, and the construction will run through November-ish. That's the expected time frame. So there will be some construction. The work is planning to be done on non-commute times, evenings and weekends, but all traffic will be required to slow to 25 miles per hour in the construction zone, which is on Marsh Creek Road between Morgan Territory and Deer Valley Road. So get ready for that. Next, our Public Works Department will be doing some road work in the next couple weeks to do repaving and grinding of failed sections of pavement. The one that I can see that would most heavily impact this community would be Brentwood area, Brentwood Boulevard between Sellers Avenue and Byron Highway. And that work is to take place during the weeks of June 10th and June 17th from 6:30 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Next, just want to remind you, I know I let you guys know about it last month, but the VetCon 2013, again, is scheduled for Monday, July 15th in Concord, and it will be a great resource for our veterans and their families. Next, I'm not sure if I shared this with you, but if I didn't, I want to make sure I do. The Sierra Club of California wrote a very good letter to Governor Brown regarding the EDCP plan. This is a kind of old letter with Delta things move so quickly, but it was May 6th, but it is a good letter. If you haven't seen it, I'll leave some copies. You should check it out. Just a reminder, I'm sure your community is well aware since it's going to take place right next door, but Delta Diablo Sanitation District will be holding their household hazardous waste event next weekend, the 15th of June. And again, this is the second of the three that they're doing for East County. The last one will be October 5th. Thank you for discussing tonight the issues on Highway 4 with regards to people crossing over the median illegally, as well as a concern with semi-trucks parking along Highway 4, and we're also seeing a concern with them parking on Bixler. So I talked to the sheriff, and we'll work with CHP as well, but thank you for discussing that tonight. Just want to let you guys know, we heard from DBW today that they started treatment on Aguirre Denza this week. So they did receive their permits, and they've started treatment. It will be taking place on the west side again, and they will be getting us a map. So once we get that, we will send it your way. And I think that's it for me.
Any questions from the board?
No.
Bill? Any questions from the audience?
I have one.
We have one.
I'm sorry, can we go back to the hazardous waste event that you said is next Saturday?
Yeah, I have a flyer for you.
Perfect, thank you.
Any other questions? Karen, thank you.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to, we'll now look at C, presentations. Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Vice President, members of the board. Tonight, I have Tom Gaffney and Allison Lahovich from Bartle Wells Associates. They're going to present to you the draft of the rate study that was completed recently, their draft rate study that they've been working on over the past couple of months. It takes us beginning with July 1st, 2013, and would end through end on June 30, 2017. It's a four-year rate study. And so without any further ado, Tom, why don't you go ahead and come on up to the microphone and we'll set the PowerPoint for you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Once again, my name is Todd Gaffney, and Allison Lahovich is here to help me. We're going to do a brief review of our rate study. There it is. And first of all, the presentation overview, we're going to review your current rates. We prepared a rate study for both the water and the wastewater nearby agencies. We are going to recommend some rate adjustments, but they're minor. We think they make the rates more equitable. We developed some financial plan metrics, and we've just done a large bond issue, so that's important for this. We're making some financial projections. In your bond documents, you made a coverage pledge that you would make sure you generate sufficient revenues to provide coverage for the bonds through their maturity. And then we're going to make a residential bill projection. So. We'd like this to be informal for the board. If you don't, you can interrupt us at any time, and we kind of like that. It's just to get some information out. And so I think Allison's going to start off with several of our charts.
So, hi, I'm Allison Lahovich. I'm a rate analyst working for Tom on your water and wastewater rate study. What we did was we looked at your currently in place rates and your customer base. And so for water, you have about two-thirds of your customers are unmetered, and they're billed annually on the property tax roll. Here is the residential rate schedule for unmetered customers. The most common customer is a residential customer on a lot size of 5,000 square feet to 10,000 square feet, and that customer has an annual fee on the property tax roll of $468.48, and the monthly equivalent of that is about $39.04. You can see smaller parcel sizes are assumed to use less water, so they are charged less, and then larger parcel sizes are assumed to use more water, presumably for outdoor irrigation, watering lawns, that sort of thing. And so they are charged for more water use, basically. Okay. You also have about one-third of your residential customers are metered. So those customers are paying for their actual metered water use. Each 100 cubic foot of water is charged a rate of $1.36. And that water use is billed monthly. Now, those metered customers also pay a monthly fee based on the size of the meter, and that monthly fee is charged annually. So it's the monthly fee times 12, which is billed to the property tax roll. You can see that larger meter sizes are billed a larger monthly fee. You also have a number of irrigation meters. And you can see that the irrigation meter fees are lower than the domestic and commercial meter fees. And that's because water systems have to upsize storage and pumping and have excess capacity available at all times for fire flow. So if there's an emergency, your facilities have to be ready at all times, and there is a significant cost associated with maintaining that fire flow. So that fire flow service is for domestic and commercial, whereas irrigation is just for outdoor use, so they don't need fire flow. But both domestic, commercial, and irrigation are all paying that water usage rate of the $1.36 per 100 cubic foot. Okay. This chart shows how a metered customer is billed. We looked at the typical residential consumption across the district, and the typical customer uses 19 HCF per month, and that's multiplied by the rate of $1.36. So the typical customer is paying about $25.86 in water usage charges. You add the fixed meter fee of $9.25, and so the typical meter customer is paying $35.11 per month. We compare that to the unmetered customer, the typical charge, which was $39.04, which was on the previous chart. And you're probably wondering, well, what's the difference in price there? And the difference is that an unmetered customer doesn't have any incentive to conserve, and they tend to use more water because they're not paying an additional unit rate for each 100 cubic foot.
Do we ask questions in the middle of this thing, or do we wait
for a moment?
Okay. That's an assumption, though. You're assuming that they're not conserving, and that's an overall. And I'm not criticizing. Yeah. I just want to, for observation purposes.
It is an assumption.
Okay.
And it's the reason why the state is requiring meters from all the water districts in it. I think it's by 2020, and it's because customers with water meters do use less water, and that's the whole point. And there's a huge push towards metering all customers.
And then. The only question I would have, and maybe you're going to get to this, but how do you come up with the formula for 2/3 of the houses that don't have meters at X amount, and then the balance of that being split out by putting rates on it? Are you going to get to that, or is that?
Well, no, that's actually what we showed. In other words, we know that we have the number of meters of each size. We have your total water consumption, so we can figure out an average consumption for all of your customers, and then we can figure out, okay, the fixed meter charge brings us in so much revenue, and the rest of the revenue we have to bring in from the volume charge. We know how much volume you sell overall.
Right.
You see what I mean? So that's how we set it. And it's set to develop, which I'll go over a little bit later, it's set to develop, and we want to pay your operating costs and your debt service costs from these revenues. Okay. We can discuss it some more, too.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to have to think about my questions a little bit before I go further. Thank you.
So we compared the typical bills in Discovery Bay with other local water suppliers in your area. And you can see that Discovery Bay is completely on the low end. So that means if a person in Discovery Bay got up and moved to one of these other cities or districts, that customer would be paying a lot more for water. And in some cases, you know, double to almost triple the cost. And what this demonstrates is that your customers are getting very good value for the water service. Next, I want to go over the wastewater rates and charges. On this chart, it shows the residential fixed wastewater charges. All residential customers are billed an annual fixed charge on the property tax. And I didn't put it on the chart here, but commercial customers are billed a volume rate for wastewater based on metered water use. And the commercial customer rates are different for each customer type. So a restaurant that's emitting fats, oils, and grease into the wastewater system, that type of wastewater is very expensive to treat. And so they're paying a higher rate than, say, an office building, which has domestic strength wastewater flow. And your last consultant did a cost allocation between different types of wastewater flow, and we reviewed it, and it's very much in line with State Water Resources Control Board recommended guidelines. So we found that to be very reasonable. So you can see that the typical residential customer, that's the 5,000 square foot to 10,000 square foot customer, is paying $669.24 per year, which is a monthly bill of $55.77. For wastewater, the parcel sizes all have the same wastewater charge, and that's because wastewater is really indoor water use that's flushed into the sewer. So it doesn't include that outdoor irrigation because that doesn't go into the sewer. So that's why all these customers have the same rate or charge.
So you're assuming that a less than 5,000 square foot home and an over 10,000 square foot home had the same amount of bathrooms and the same amount of people in them?
Well, that's the lot size, not the home size. So yes, we are. We have a flat rate for residential.
Okay. No, I mean, I'm just asking questions. I'm not keeping score. I'm just asking questions.
So the most common customer is paying the equivalent of $55.77 per month. So the wastewater bill survey, we found that Discovery Bay is on the higher side. One thing to note, though, both in the water and the wastewater bill survey, is that a lot of your neighbors are implementing rate increases over the next few years. Tracy has a rate increase that's going into effect at the start of the fiscal year. I actually called up Mountain House to ask them what their rates are, and they said, oh, we're doing a rate study right now. So even though you're on the higher side, your neighbors are all going to be implementing rate increases over the next few years as well. One consideration in developing our recommendations for the rate study was keeping in mind that Discovery Bay is at the high side already. We wanted to keep the rate adjustments very affordable, recognizing this is kind of the ranking. The interesting thing to note is you have a lower water bill and then you're on the higher side for sewer, but the combined bill is very reasonable compared to a lot of other districts and cities in this area. You can see both the metered and the unmetered rate, $90.88 and $94.81 are on the lower end. Okay, and up next, Tom is gonna go over some rate adjustments.
Thank you. Push it here.
Well,
so why are your water rates on the low side and your sewer rates are on the high side? And it's interesting, we've done hundreds of rate studies, water and wastewater. And what the other customers or what the other agencies are doing really has nothing to do with what you're doing, but for some reason everybody wants to know. And so why is your water rate low? Well, I believe it's because your water supply is, some agencies pay a huge amount for water supplies and you have well water. And so it doesn't necessarily require treatment, although maybe it requires some, like from what we've heard here. But so I think your water supply keeps your water rate low. In the wastewater side, you aren't a big agency, and you've got to operate treatment plants. You know, you have two of them. And so you don't have a lot of customers to spread that cost over, like, for example, Tracy, which is on the low end of the sewer rate. And so it's interesting, you know, the same agency with the same administration and everything has a higher water, has a real low water rate and a slightly higher wastewater rate. And that's what happens. And that's probably the reason why. Now, we mentioned that we were going to make some, let's see if I can do this right. Nope. Some adjustments to your the way you do your rates. And what we'd like to point out is that, there's a charge for, this doesn't show up, there's a charge for different size meters. And if you look at the residential and commercial meters, the 1-inch meter is charged a monthly flat rate of a 9.25. And then the 1.5-inch meter is charged slightly more, 9.56. And you compare those, the ratio of the 1.5-inch meter to the 1-inch meter is only just, 3% higher. And the basic, the way rates are structured now, that used to be the way it was done a long time ago. But the way rates are structured now is that you measure demand, and demand is roughly the square of the diameter. And so the AWWA ratios, which they recommend, and which really are used predominantly in California now and probably most of the other states, The ratio is that if you have a 1-inch meter, comparing a 1-inch meter to a 2-inch meter, the flat rate charge, the basic monthly charge, should be 2 times the amount of the 1-inch meter. And the same, the 2-inch meter should be, you know, it's basically the square, so if you square 2, it's 4, so it should be kind of 4 times what a 1-inch meter is. Well, 3.2 is the recommendation, and so on. Up to 20 times for a 6-inch meter. A 6-inch meter is gigantic, by the way. You know, the city of Solvang, for example, has a 6-inch meter providing service to the entire city. So you don't have any 6-inch meters, by the way, so we don't have to worry about it. But we think that you should change those. We're recommending that you adjust those flat rate charges according to the AWWA ratio. There's not very many customers there, but they're big customers, and so that's a reasonable amount. The same with the irrigation meters. We put them on the same ratio. The irrigation meters pay less because of fire flow. They don't require the big storage tanks and the big oversized lines and the pumps and everything. But the ratio should be the same. And your irrigation meters, you don't get a lot of money from the meter charge. But irrigation meters use a lot of water. And so that's the predominant amount of revenue that you get from an irrigation meter is from the volume charge. Now, I think I get this right. Okay. So when we do a rate study, you know, a rate study is really a financial plan because you have to make allowances for, you've got to fund projected operating costs, you've got to meet your debt service coverage, you just sold a fairly substantial bond issue, you've got to make sure you're providing the coverage that's provided in the bond documents. We're recommending that as a minimum, you maintain an operating fund balance of 6 months of operating costs, and that's just your cash flow and your working capital. A very capital-intensive type agency, you certainly need to have some funds in reserve. And then you've got a pretty aggressive capital program, so you've got to fund those capital costs. So you have to build those into our rate structure. For the water financial plan, we've made a projection. The blue is the operating costs. The reddish is the debt service. And then the green is the capital. And the black line that goes, it doesn't show on the TV, the black line going up there is your projected revenues. Now, for the current years and next year, your revenues are in excess of your total expenses. But in later years, when the capital program kicks in, you're going to use that revenue that you stored up to fund those capital projects. And you see that towards the end there, you're going to need all the extra revenue that you've generated. But these are based on, we'll talk about this more, 2.7% rate increase the first year, and then basically inflation in the following 3 years. Now here's the wastewater. Remember, Allison told you that we're concerned because wastewater is on the higher side. We don't want to hit the customers with a heavy rate increase here. But we're barely making it, and you can see that we really don't cover operating and debt service until fiscal year 2017. Now, we don't miss by very much. We do have an excess this current fiscal year, and you do have considerable reserves. So you're drawing down your reserves a little bit in the wastewater program, but by the fourth year, you're right on, if you can see the black line hits right where the blue, the combined blue and red meet. Now, a lot of the green can also be financed by connection fees whenever they come in. And you've got a large share of your projects which are development driven. So if the development does occur, you get the connection fee revenue, you can build the projects. If the development doesn't occur, you don't have the revenue, but you don't need the projects because there hasn't been any development. So that's kind of a good way. And I know we helped you adopt a connection charge program to finance those facilities. So it's consistent with that.
What's your inflation rate?
Inflation rate we used was 4%. And your rates are set to that, can't exceed that. So that's the way it works. So you have to maintain your debt service coverage. You've promised 1.25. and it's a combined water and wastewater debt service coverage. So you can see, sewer doesn't cover it quite, but water makes up for it. And water has coverages that are terrific. Remember, we needed to provide 1.25%. But a very small amount of the bond issue is related to water. Almost all the bond issue is the wastewater portion. So that's where we need to really provide the coverage. And you're a AA- rated district, which is very high, quite a good rating for a small district. And the reason is that you do have adequate coverage. You've shown the rating agencies that you're a financially sound agency. So that is it. Now I got one more chart here. What else did it isn't showing. But we have a residential built. There we go. So these are our recommendations. We're recommending that the have a recommended increase of 2.7% in the first year, and then the inflation rate, and the assumed amount is 4%. You can go up to that amount. You can do below if you want. But the letter to the folks shows 2.7 and then 4s. And we've shown there the projection of rates. For example, the metered customer goes from $35 up to about $40.50 in 4 years. And the wastewater rate goes from $55 to $64. And overall, your rates probably will be in the bottom, well into the bottom half compared to everybody else. What we always say on rate recommendations, you do have reserves, you're in good shape right now, but what is by far the best way to do rates is annual smaller rate increases as opposed to zero, zero, and then double figures. Nobody thanks you for not raising rates, but they'll criticize you, and it's bad financial planning to go 0.0011. I mean, that's what you could do, or 0.0014 or 15. And we see a lot of agencies do that. By far the best is the smaller, but that's the absolute best way to do this.
We have a little experience with that.
If I can add two things to Tom's comments, one that Director Steele had inquired about was the CPI. CPI for water and sewer using the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics for the Consumer Price Index nationally. 12 months is 4.7% for this year. So we're looking at 2.7%. And then Carol handed out, and she put in the back of the room, a draft of the notice, and it has the spreadsheet on the back side of it that the board is familiar with and seeing in the past. So you can see where you fall and where the different rates are and how they fall into the rate structure.
You know, what happens on both water and sewer is they're environmental utilities, and they're subject to regulatory review, and they're not loosening the regulations. And so the price index for water and wastewater is higher than the general consumer price index.
We have any questions from the board?
I just want to go back a minute to this. Because you're talking about an increase in commercial rates, I'm assuming based on the size of the meter, those are going to be commercial rates that are going to be in the 700 or 800% range for the monthly charges.
But that part of it is.
How does that equate overall? Is that a small amount of the total billing? So it doesn't raise it that much?
Very small amount.
It looks big.
Yeah, exactly.
When you go from 18 to 106, that looks big. But if that's just a small percentage of, if that's mitigated across their actual usage bill, so you really don't notice it nearly as much, then it's not a big deal.
Well, they're going to notice it, but it's, their major portion of their bill is their volume rate. But they are going to notice it.
Well, yeah, because that's
smart people.
That's $95, or that's $85 a month, or $82 a month.
The real point of it is it's an equity situation in that the larger meters place a greater demand on the system, and the demand is proportional to those ratios. They've been, you know, we didn't do those, we've used them for years, but they've been, they're nationally accepted standard for how meter charge should be.
That factor ratio you were talking about.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
Chris, anything?
I'm good, thanks.
Bill? Yeah. In the staff report, it talks about the rate 2.5, and it says, should be noted that these maximum rates will continue thereafter. In other words, you've got an automatic adjustment for a five-year period, and they're going to continue after the fiscal year 2016-17 and remain in effect until a subsequent rate study is completed and a Prop 18 hearing conducted. Does that mean that we're talking about we're at 4% at 2017 and in 2018 it's 4%, 2019. Yeah.
It means that the 40, for example, the 40-56 will continue unless the board, you know, does another study and decides to increase rates. They can't increase beyond what's in your Prop 218 notice. And so the Prop 218 notice goes out to 2016, fiscal year 2017. And if you don't do something, they stay at the 2017 rate until you do something.
The rate stays the same.
The rate stays the same. There's no adjustment. There's no 4% beyond the period of the 218 notice.
Okay, so maybe I wasn't reading that.
Well, in other words, they stay the same. Maybe that's what it
is. Right, that's what
they're unchanged.
They remain the same unless changed.
Okay, and I was reading the rate increase.
Well, I looked at that.
Remain the same.
We're still working on the language of the notice to make that clear. That way, if you get to 2017 and you determine that the rates are sufficient, if you did not have the and thereafter provision, you'd literally have to go back and do another Prop 218. So instead, we're building into this rate increase that when you get to the end of 2017, the rate will be fixed at those amounts that you see up there. There's no 4% increase and will remain at that amount until such time as you do another.
Correct. The rate remains fixed.
Yeah.
Until we do this thing.
And that's the maximum rate. You could be below that.
Sure.
So maybe we'll clarify some language on that one.
Yeah, and then the other one I was a little confused on. It says we got capital, five-year capital improvement program. Based upon your study, rate adjustments moving forward are expected to moderate significantly over the four-year forecast period.
That was my language, and what I was referring to, and I apologize if it was confusing, is that the last 2 years we saw significant rate increases. This is moderating those rate increases significantly from what we've had over the past couple of years. That's what that was referring to.
We probably used a different language on that one. Okay, so that, all right. What I was trying to clarify is make sure that you're telling me something here that might not pick it up on right over there. All right.
Well, if it's unclear to the board, it might be unclear to the public.
Well, so that's why we're supposed to be here, asking questions.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Is there any public comment?
We have several.
Virgil works for us. You can come up first.
Come
on up first. Yeah. He's on the clock. He can come up later.
Obviously, I'm going to come up here as you've already heard comments from me before. So one thing I just want to point out is that the cost, you know, we're getting water at a bargain, but that doesn't factor in the cost that it takes for us to internally clean our water before we can actually use it. So there's filters and other systems that we have to maintain internally in order to get water that is looks somewhat normal to present to our families. So really, those numbers, I believe, are not accurate by any means.
Thank you.
Just to go back to Bill, I think after 2017, you can still raise your rates based on the cost of living that's built into your rate structure today. You can only go to the B area one, I believe.
No, is that no, the rate increases by statute or the automatic inflator is a maximum of 5 years.
Right.
What you proposed here will get to that point there. That's it.
So they changed that.
They did. Yeah, you used to be able to index your rates. You know, you look at a percentage of 3% and continue, but you can't do that anymore.
That's
your notice.
It's due this year.
No, it's been several years.
It's been even about
4 or 5 years.
What I read is that's what we've applied for, the maximum, that unless there's another rate study, that's all we can ask for. There's no more until we have another rate study.
That's right.
Any other questions?
If it's 5 years, why doesn't it go? If it's 5 years, why doesn't it go through 2018?
Because we wanted to do 4 years.
Okay.
And, you know, we could do five. You can do anything up to 4 or 5 years.
It's forcing us to do a rate study earlier than we would need to otherwise.
We've had rate studies we did one 2 years ago, we did one the year before that. I think prior to that was when prior to my arrival was when that CPI inflator was in place, and that subsequently changed. So with tonight's action, we're just presenting it to you. If you have any comments, questions, concerns, we will be scheduling this for a public hearing for a meeting in July. The draft of the public notice will be going to the mailing house sometime probably early next week. And the rate hearing, the Prop 218 hearing, will take place on August the 7th. So that's the schedule of events relative to this item this evening.
Thank you very much.
Doesn't the board need to authorize the Bailey?
Yes, they do.
Okay, I move staff recommendation.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on. Do we have any committee reports tonight? Transplant, county planning, code enforcement, or special district? Nothing?
No. All right, I have something on my report. That's cool.
Go ahead. You don't want to hear it?
No.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the consent calendar. Can I get a motion?
Move to approve consent calendar.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. New business. This goes to you, Rick. Install solar dryer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President, members of the board. It's my item here on the agenda. This is another component of the biosolids treatment process that we've been constructing over the past year or so. We're getting to the end of the road, and this is one of the last components, which is the actual construction of the dryers themselves. Earlier in the year, you awarded a contract to purchase them, and it's a fairly long and lengthy process for manufacturing. And Ruff Brothers Greenhouses is the sole proprietary company that works with Parkson relative to the solar dryers for the construction installation. Gregory Harris, our district engineer, is here, and he can address any other questions that the board may have. Like I said, this project is budgeted. It's in the capital finance projects, and so we're just looking forward to getting the project completed.
Rick, along with the purchase price, we budgeted $213 to install it.
It's part of the capital project. It's part of the budget for the project.
Oh, I got that. But along with purchasing the equipment, did we also budget $213,000 to install it?
No, in the order or the action, the motion to approve purchase, it was just for the purchase of the equipment. At that time, we didn't know what it was going to cost to install, and we did not have a price for that. So your motion last August to purchase was just for the purchase cost. So now this is coming back to you to install the equipment, and that was after we negotiated the price with Rao Brothers based upon the actual final submitted building, so everyone knew exactly what was going to be constructed.
I guess what my question is, at the time that we purchased equipment, wouldn't we know that we'd have an expense to put it in?
Well, you do. It was in the construction cost for the capital improvement.
That's what I'm asking. That's my question.
Oh, yes. It's in the improvement.
Okay. That's all I'm asking.
Well, I would follow up on that statement just by asking, at the time that we estimated our capital, the CIP, how close do we are on the estimate of what the installation was as part of the budget? How close is this to the budget number?
On the, so far, on the solar dryer project, we are very close to being right on budget.
Good.
And I represented that like two months ago. I gave you the update. Uh-huh. Solar dryers are right on. The only thing we're really over budget on is the Hedberg's project.
Sure. But we're dealing with this now. So this is in the budget. This is pretty doggone close to what we budgeted for this from the CIP
program. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Questions?
Recommend board action on
this. Let me go with the public. Okay.
Oh, yeah, we can do that.
Any public comment?
Move to recommend board action. Move to recommend staff recommendation.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Before Greg walks away, as you may have noted, that I provided information to you in our Friday letter last week that Gregory's son Ryan is working for us this summer as a school intern, as a college intern. He's going to be a junior at Sonoma State.
That's correct.
And so he's working for us this summer. Well, we're getting good free grunt labor out.
Come back next summer, we'll double your pay.
I'd love to.
About 4 hours.
Awesome. Thanks for being here.
Okay, so let's move on to the annual Discovery Bay Lighting and Landscape Zone 8 appropriations limit for fiscal year 2014, adopt and approve resolution 2013-09.
I'm going to turn this over to Farron Perez, our Parks and Landscape Manager. This is an annual item relative to Article 13B of the California Constitution appropriation limit.
He almost covered it all with that. This is an annual item that comes before you. It's a calculation, and our governing authority is required to adopt the appropriations limit. It sets a ceiling for the amount of taxes that we are able to collect. This is not the amount of taxes we will be collecting in Zone 8. That tax amount is much lower, but each year we calculate this based on different numbers that the Department of Finance puts out for the state. This year's calculations are based on the per capita personal income increases and the change of population. This is the same calculation numbers that we've used historically, basically because the other option is through commercial construction and we don't have much of that. So the calculation numbers are here. If you have questions, I know Dr. Pieces might be a new one for you. So.
Yeah. Said something I thought I heard. If I'm hearing this right, we're setting a maximum amount that we could ask for. However, as we finish our budget, you're going to adjust that for this particular district. It'll be less than this.
So zone eight is assessment amount. It's a portion of the 1% of your property taxes that comes to us. I have no control over how much money. It's not based on what we need or what we don't need. It's a percentage. This just sets the ceiling that makes sure that we don't take more than that percentage each year. So it started, I think in the 70s at some point, and then each year you get to, only increase by the amount of increases that you would face with the
if property taxes. If that portion of the property taxes, if the economy were such and the portion of property taxes were above this amount, we would only get this amount.
We would have to return.
But because the property taxes that we receive are below that amount, that's what we get. If we brought in more, we can get more. If the county brought in more, we could get more, but they don't.
Correct, and we can get no more than 554, yes. Whatever.
It's unrelated.
Right.
It would actually be returned to the taxpayers. You would have to notify and
return. Correct. The light bulb has come on.
Okay.
Do you have any other?
But that's only for the people living
in that zone.
Right. Any comments?
No.
Chris? Thanks.
Move staff recommendation.
Hold on one second. Any public comment?
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
I'll just call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It's unanimous. Thanks, sir.
Oh, she's not going
anywhere.
I know,
she's got more to do, I know. Item 3, discussion and award of landscape maintenance contract for Discovery Bay Landscape and Lighting Zone 8. Farron.
Thank you. The current landscape maintenance contract for Zone 8 is set to expire on June 30th. The current contract did allow for some extensions, 2 one-year extensions to be exact. I did not bring those forth due to some issues or concerns we had with performance and irrigation management that we had worked on and kind of notified the board of earlier or last year. We released an RFP on April 23rd and had a mandatory site visit on May 2nd. There were 5 companies in attendance, 4 submitted the bid. Of the 4 companies, 3 of the bids were responsive. One of them did not turn in a required piece of the proposal. Of those reviewed, were at the recommendation is to award the contract to Odyssey Landscaping. They are the second lowest bidder. Valley Crest was the first. The Valley Crest amount came in at $7,125, with Odyssey at $7,965. Now, that's about a $10,000 a year difference in contract values. Some of the things that were considered during this was that Valley Crest's current contract amount is about just under $8,500 a month, and I see struggles with keeping up the maintenance to the standards of the contract as is. Their new proposal for moving next forward with the same contract standards is about $1,400 less. I did have a meeting, a sit down with them, with their management to discuss how, you know, what their plans were to address the cut in there, you know, how are they going to do this, and it was stated that it was going to just affect their bottom line, that it was basically their bottom line was going to be affected by this, but our level of service would not. They also provided a management plan, which if was enacted would provide a little bit more oversight in our area, but I have concerns with that because we've had these discussions before. One of the things that I had asked last night when we were discussing the budget, and we hit an item on there about irrigation management and our irrigation numbers going over. That's a huge one for me right now, especially with the cost of our water increases on our side. That's affected our budget significantly, as utilities are the second highest cost in outside of our payroll and grounds maintenance. So last year, I brought an example just to show you the financial impact of proper irrigation management. Is that we installed a weather track clock at Cornell Park in 2010. And for the 2011 year, I managed that clock based on ET values. ET stands for evapotranspiration, which is the rate of water leaves the ground and how much needs to be replenished. The clock automatically reads those rates and adjusts every day. We ran that clock, and from the 2010 quarter to, so April through June, just at Cornell, I'm using one park for an example, to the next year, 2011, we dropped our water 45% there. When we gave it back to Valley Crest from 2011, we went from 2,649 units back up to 5,156 units. So we doubled the usage that we did before. That value, just in one quarter at one park, was $3,412. So when you're looking at a contract, with going back to my recommendation to go with a company that I feel confident with irrigation management skills and overall landscape management, is that there is value elsewhere within that contract. If you're managing your irrigation properly, there are other considerations there.
In layman's terms, are you telling me they're overwatering? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. I thought that's where we were going, but I wasn't. I just want to be sure that I was clear on that.
Yes.
Like, they're 100% over what we found.
Just last month's bills came over, and we have our new billing system. I don't know if you guys have seen the water bills, but they actually show historical the last year, the last 12 months. So you can compare this month with what you were at last month, or last year, I'm sorry. And we're 50% over on across the board in Zone 8 on double from last year on all of them.
What question I have on, you said you had put in a sophisticated watering meter system, which is fine. Were they responsible to operate
they
that?
They are.
So we had the piece of equipment there, and they failed to listen to your guidance?
Well, one of the things I think that they struggle with is, and there's been a number of turnovers with the account managers that we've had on this account in this area through the branch. It's a new branch that supports our district here, and they've had a number of turnovers. In the 3 years that they've held the contract that I've been here, we've gone through five. And so trying to pass down information from each one, which is a lot to download,
right,
and it's just not getting there. So.
Okay.
Do we as a management practice monitor the water bills every month?
Not monthly. We look at them quarterly.
Okay. And how often do we, what's the practice for having feedback between the service company and our staff? How often, when do they have an evaluation?
There's not like an annual evaluation, but we drive up at least once a month. We talk quite often. I more so with the Valley Crest contract than with the contract on the other side of town, and because there's usually some issues that we need to discuss. So it's fairly often. And irrigation management is one of those things that keeps coming up. You know, so.
Do they have to give a written report monthly to us?
They do.
Karen, if we were to bring Odyssey in to Zone 8, who was not the prior contractor, would Valley Crest have any contracts left in Discovery Bay with us?
With us?
Yeah. Huh?
Not with our district.
They would be. They would no longer be in the district at that point. And how much of our work would be Odyssey, 100%?
Yes. They right now are the low. They hold the other contract.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Okay.
Valley Crest does good work at the golf course, but not for us.
When is the other district or the other zones up for?
We just did an extension to Odyssey. Just this year. So they're on their first 1 year extension right now, and I believe it was January that they got extended. It was January.
All right, and if we move forward with this, would be a 2 year for.
It would start a 2 year, and then based on performance, if they were doing well, we would offer extension. We would come to you like we did with their last one. If that's what you.
Is there a limit on extension?
We typically do a 4 year cycle with them. It's a 2 year contract, landscape contract, and then we typically would do two 1 year extensions. So there's a possibility of a 4 year before you would go out and do a rebid. Before you set it back down the street. However, there is always an opportunity at any point in time that you can go ahead and terminate the contract based on performance. That's in our contractual language. So we do have that unilateral ability to do that.
The question I have, and I'm going to abstain from this vote because I have a personal relationship with management, Valley Crest. The question I have as staff, have we sat them down? Valley Crest, look, you're in jeopardy of losing this contract. And gone above your project? Okay. I think, like I said, I'm staying out of this.
Yeah. We submitted last summer about 130 pictures with notes, a letter. We sat down with the branch manager, the regional vice president, their account managers. They had basically 30 days to get it in order, and they did. At the time, they did. They came in, they cleaned up, it looked great, and then we kind of fell back into the same pattern. And at that time, they had said that we'd have some additional support from, you know, the upper management, and for about 6 weeks we did, and it's just fallen off since then. So, and we have a new account manager, again, since even then, you know, so.
Yeah, I'd like to figure out how a correction acting system works, and I'd like to, encourage you guys to have a tighter feedback constantly. I'd like to see a regular status on how they're doing this next year, if they improve, or I want your feedback on how if you decide to change, if we decide to change the vendors, I'd like to see how that works.
Okay.
So, is that okay?
I can tell you that if you go to zone, if you
you go to Cornell Park, which we walk with you and Rick Simon with Darren and myself a number of months back, and if you were to take that same walk over at Ravenswood Park, for example, or the Slipher Park, for example, they are significantly in better shape from a maintenance standpoint than our parks are on the site. And it's unfortunate because Valley Crest has been with us for a long time. We'd love to keep that relationship going.
Any public comment? Virgil, I know you had a question.
As you know, I sit on another board on the HOA on the golf course, and we are having problems with Valley Crest. We had a meeting with them today, and we are at the stress level that Barron's at, probably even a little higher because of the service and the performance they're doing on the golf course.
Is there any other public comment? Ms. Bill.
It's the last time you get to sit in your seat and talk for Bill.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's not fair.
He's louder. That's
all right. So Zone 8 is everything on this side of town. So from all of our common areas, from Cornell Park all the way through down Discovery Bay Boulevard, Clipper Drive, Highway 4, and down to Newport until you almost get to Plain and Timber. Actually, Newport Lane, Newport and Newport Lane is the boundary there. So that encompasses Zone 8.
So how many zones total on Discovery
Bay? There are five.
I'm going to call for motion. I'm going to abstain from this.
Okay.
So I will call for a motion at this point.
I'll move staff recommendation.
Second.
I'd like to make a comment. I would like to say that, Darren, you've done an excellent job. I didn't know the background. And I'm looking, well, and it's 10,000 more, et cetera, et cetera. You've explained the situation. I think you've handled it properly. And I want to commend you for making the decision to go with a little bit higher bidder, knowing that you're going to be able, it helped us to be able to see that we can get a little better bang for our dollar in the long run. So thank you.
With that, we'll call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? One abstention. Thank you. Thanks, Ron. Okay, let's go to item 4, letter to Caltrans regarding Highway 4 and Regatta Drive traffic concerns.
Carol should have handed out in the back of the room. There's a revised letter.
He gave it to me.
The issue here is that traffic residents that exit Regatta Drive on the Highway 4 utilize see on the big screen there, they utilize that dirt median. You can see where the drive lines are there, where people have gone through that as a shortcut, and it poses problems with ongoing traffic and traffic movements. And then the other thing that happens is that's generally for people when they leave, when they're coming home from the west, they'll turn left onto Regatta Drive. When they come out, they'll turn left onto Highway 4, and folks.
And the rancher who has the horses, you can see where he turns into his driveway.
And when people come west on Highway 4 from Discovery Bay Boulevard, for example, they want to access that stable area. They cut across there as well. There was a similar problem like this a number of years ago, if you recall, across from the Sandy Point Shopping Center. And Caltrans did install a fence median barrier so that those traffic movements could not continue to take place. Additionally, and the addition, the change in the original letter that was in your package to the revision this evening is that there are also there's also a large semi-tractor trailer rig that parks on the just to the west of Regatta Drive on Highway 4, and it would be heading westbound, if you will, right at our east, right at our westernmost boundary, where the field begins. And he parks there, and he uses that as overnight parking routinely. And it is unsightly, and it does pose a potential traffic issue. And the request for this, the letter is actually not to Caltrans. I found out today, the letter would actually be addressed to Supervisor Pipo, who is trying to lobby Caltrans to put a median island at that location. So the letter would actually be going to her so that she can go ahead and put a number of other letters to Caltrans to encourage them to be able to do that. Do you have any questions?
Rick, let me ask you another. I know because I just went through this with my motor home. You can contact the sheriff. That big rig can only sit on the street for 3 hours. Same as a motor home.
But even worse than that, Mark, you see where the white line starts to veer out right there on the far left-hand side of the picture? See how how it gets starts to get wider right there? Okay, it parks right there. Yeah. Well, that white line right there indicates emergency parking only.
Exactly.
It's on a highway.
He can't park there. Exactly. So, I mean, at this point, even without the letter, I would, obviously, the letter is my support.
But I would include that as opposed to just unsightly, because that's really not the issue. The issue is he's parked in emergency parking zone.
It's
there.
Illegal.
And that's also a merging area. So, if there were something to occur, you're going to hit the back of his truck instead of having that runoff right there. It's right at the merge.
He's illegal where he's parked, and it is 3 hour parking on any street in the vicinity of Discovery Bay. So, both.
And that's a very good point. I would also copy Lieutenant Johnson on that as well, and have a discussion with him on that. I know that the sheriffs are out and they are citing some people for more than 3 hours because.
Yes,
Carol just got one 2 weeks ago.
I just got one the other day.
That's the highway. That's a CHP issue.
It's still the sheriff. The sheriff is waiting.
It's still in the county. It's county
ordinance. The sheriff, if you ask them, they'll say the guy. They'll tell more.
Vehicle, Carol?
My boat.
Do you have any comments from the board?
I'm in favor of.
Any comments from the public? You just need a staff recommendation at this point to send a letter. It's already a done deal, isn't it?
Yeah, what I would do is I would just finalize the letter and get President Tetra to sign it tomorrow or Friday.
I'm in favor also. Yeah. Do you need
guidance from the board or is that all I need?
Correct.
Do you need a motion?
You do need it. Okay.
It's just staff recommendation.
Yeah, move for staff recommendation.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous?
Thank you, Rick.
Item 5, surplus Discovery Bay Community Center equipment and disposal of surplus equipment.
And it comes back to us. At the last board meeting, you recall, we discussed the options of surplusing out the fitness equipment of the community center. One of the board recommendations was actually a very good recommendation, and we went out and we solicited and contacted a number of companies that are in the fitness industry. And one of them is a very large company that is a manufacturer. We did solicit informal bids. The value is under $10,000. Our purchasing procedures allow for an informal bidding process when it is under those values. And we have three bids. We have four interested parties. We had Liberty High School Booster Club was interested, and they did not submit an offer. We did contact them a number of times, and I know that Director Simon, the referral was from you, I believe, on that, and so we wanted to make sure.
Well, the bid from Tony, that's Tony George.
Tony George,
that's
right.
Who it's for.
Yeah, I know, and he never responded. We emailed back and forth a number of times, and then we had another gentleman and FitGuard, who provided our appraisal, as well as Cybex Northern California, and that's the company that actually manufactured a lot of the equipment. And so their bid offer was the highest at $8,000. And so we're recommending sale to Cybex Northern California for $8,000.
You know, I prefer donating it to the Liberty High School. I don't know if we get the money that bad, but I don't know. That's surplus equipment that had no value when we bought the community center. I think we should consider that also.
If I may, Mr.
Please.
President, you are bound under the California Constitution prohibiting gift of public funds, so donation would be problematic unless you could demonstrate there was no interest in the property. And you obviously have the opposite.
Thanks, Jeff.
Sorry.
I will tell you that Cybex does want to donate a significant, I don't know how much of the equipment, but they are planning on donating it. They may already have somebody in mind, but if they do not, we will request that they donate it to Liberty High School. And I will follow back up with that answer and report back to the board.
Do you have any questions? If not,
all the equipment, some of the equipment, a few pieces. Maybe the school can identify what we have prior to getting back to them and say, "Gee, we'd love to have this, this, and this, two or three pieces, whatever." You know, put it all in there. I'm a little surprised that the we had a professional company come in, FitGuard, and say that this wholesale, all this is worth about $10,000, and yet when it goes out to bid, they only want to pay $7,500 for it.
Any comments from the public? I need a motion.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Let's move on to president's report and director's comments. Start down with Chris. Any comment?
Just want to give you an update. I attended the Byron Union School District meeting on May 30th, and at that time they had a position to fill on their board, vacated by Ken Sillman. A new trustee has been selected by their board, Betty Sanchez, now going to sit on the board. Mm-hmm. And they made a move. Elaine Lander is now going to be the vice president. So that's the update I have right now.
Thank you.
Kevin?
I went to the Contra Costa Fire Protection District meeting. Jeff Burrs, or Chief Burrs, pretty much told us what was discussed there. It was a very light meeting. The only thing that was of interest is that their council has resigned from being the council for that district and is going to carry on for a month-to-month basis, but they are going to be putting out an RFP or whatever the proper term is for attaining new council for the district coming up in the near future. And that's all I have.
Excellent. We should note out here.
ECCFPD.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, I'll take your report.
Bill, I need to stay.
No, nothing significant at this time.
I have nothing. Let's move on to the general manager's report.
I have two items. One is an informational item, and one is a scheduling item. Tomorrow I will be out of town. I have a very early flight in the morning, flying to a utility managers conference in Ontario. I'll be back in the afternoon. The subject matter is MSR, municipal service reviews, and since we're in the middle of our we're actually the beginning stages of our MSR, it's being hosted by the San Bernardino or Riverside County LAFCO executive director, who is evidently the guru on MSRs in the state. So I thought, since we're about to embark on our process, and I did talk to Luann Ivey with LAFCO before I just determined that was a good thing to do, and she actually highly recommended that it would be a good opportunity. The second item is the July schedule of board meetings. As you know, we meet on the first and third Wednesday of the month. We've discussed this previously with respect to the meeting on July the 3rd, and we also have a meeting scheduled for July the 17th. The July 17th meeting is problematic for staff due to it predetermined and pre-established and paid for vacations, if you will. And I had talked to Board President Tetro and Vice President Simon about the possibility of moving that meeting up one day, if at all possible. If not, we will certainly adjust and deal with it as we need to. So I'm just looking for some board direction relative to the meeting on July the 3rd and your flexibility to move the meeting on July the 17th to the 16th. Okay. I realize that is a big request for me, but I...
The meeting on the 3rd, because it's in the middle of the week and it's not a holiday, I believe that meeting should carry on as scheduled. There's no reason, if it was on a Saturday the 3rd, if the 4th of July fell on a weekend, I could understand it. It's a regular work day. Everybody's open. I believe that meeting should carry on the 3rd. As far as the meeting on the 17th, moving it from Wednesday to Tuesday, if the other board directors are okay with it, I wouldn't have a problem with it either. But we should definitely have a second meeting.
We need to have the second meeting because we have to have the first hearing, if nothing else, on the rate study.
I would be okay with moving that meeting from the 17th to the 16th because I leave on the 18th for vacation myself. So that's
how about you, Bill?
I'm pretty flexible. My suggestion was, why don't we just move the meeting of the 3rd to the 10th and meet the You move the meeting of the 17th to the 24th, just drop it 1 week, and
we have to be we have to meet by the 19th, don't
yeah.
we?
There's issues with that relative to.
I have no problem with moving it to the 17th to the 16th.
How about you, Chris?
Yeah, works for me.
All right, why don't we, if it's okay with you, let's put that meeting to the 16th.
Greatly appreciated, and thank you for that accommodation.
And we'll keep the meeting on the 3rd, on the 3rd. Do we need a motion for this, Dan, or we just carry it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, can I get a motion, please?
I'll make the motion that we adjust the schedule as recommended.
Second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Unanimous? Okay. You got another item, Rick, or no?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. District legal?
Well, I didn't have anything to say other than on the 3rd, I will be sending a colleague, possibly this young lady sitting here, since I will be on vacation. And unfortunately, I will be sending one of my colleagues for the 16th because I have another client meeting that night that I had scheduled because it was the only evening I was open that week. So anyway, I will not see you in July.
We'll put your picture on the desk.
Very kind of you.
Thanks, Sam. Committee updates, none. Correspondence, any questions? Any public records requests? Chris, anything? Kevin?
Nope.
Bill?
No.
None for me. Future agenda items? I just asked for that. Oh, no. I did.
Well,
I'd like to try the next thing is thank you for coming. We're adjourned.